Welcome into the KXCV Bearcat Coaches Show. Hope your Tuesday is off to a great start as we have a huge week coming up for Northwest Missouri State, especially on the basketball side. Northwest is back in the Elite Eight for the first time since the 2018-2019 season. Of course, 2020 didn't even have a chance. COVID-19 completely wiped out that NCAA tournament, but the Bearcats are back in, and Northwest will be meeting up with West Liberty in that 2-7 matchup. So today, throughout the coaches show, we'll be talking with some Bearcats, including head coach Ben McCollum, as he's looking for his third championship ring as head coach of Northwest Missouri State. Ryan Hawkins, a senior leader for this Bearcat basketball team. He has been so huge. He's a two-time All-MIAA Defensive Player of the Year. This year, he's a first-team All-MIAA member, while also being on the all-defense team within the conference as well. So Ryan's been phenomenal throughout this year. We're pleased to be joined by those two guys as we take a look back at the regional Northwest with a 40-plus point win over Washburn in the semifinal round of the Central Region Tournament, and then in the championship. The Bearcats found it within themselves to overcome Northern State on the road and pick up just a tremendous victory in what was a great college basketball game all around. The Bearcats come out on top, and they are into the Elite Eight with that win over Northern State. And since Northwest Missouri State is in the Elite Eight, we kind of threw it back to another time that the Bearcats were in the national quarterfinal round, 2004. It was a Jesse Shaw buzzer beater that sent the Bearcats from the Sweet 16 into the NCAA Elite Eight in Bakersfield, California. So we catch up with Jesse a little bit to talk about that big shot, what that meant to him, kind of the parallels as you think about Trevor Hudgens with a huge step-back three-pointer to send the game into overtime against Northern State. Of course, Jesse's was actually to win that basketball game down in Stephenville, Texas. So we catch up with Jesse about that. It's also his first year as the head coach at Maryville University. His former head coach at Northwest, Steve Tatmeyer, is one of his assistants. So a lot of fun stuff to dive in with Jesse on during today's Bearcat Coaches Show. So we're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll be joined by Northwest Missouri State head coach Ben McCollum. That's coming up after this time out.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Pitzenberger Auto Body in Maryville, providing auto collision repair and taking the dents out of accidents. Pitzenberger's also installs Ultimate Truck Bedliners. More at 660-582-4599 or pitsautobody.com.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Rogers Pharmacy in Maryville, St. Joe, Mound City, and Tarkio. The Rogers family has been providing Northwest Missouri families with pharmacy services, medical supplies, and home medical equipment since 1967. More online at rogersrx.com. Support for today's Bearcat broadcast comes from the Student Body Screen Printing and Embroidery, located on 4th Street in Maryville. The Student Body provides Bearcat fan wear as well as custom screen printing and embroidery for teams, clubs, and businesses throughout the Bearcat Nation. Support for the Bearcat Coaches Show on KXCV comes from Pizza Ranch at US 71 and 1st Street in Maryville. Pizza Ranch's buffet is open daily and features pizza and fried chicken with all the trimmings, plus a salad bar with dessert and ice cream. More in store at pizzaranch.com.
Welcome back. We're talking with the head coach of the Bearcat men's basketball team, Ben McCollum, as they get ready to head to Evansville, Indiana for the Elite Eight. And coach, let's just go back briefly to the big win that you had in the Central Region Championship with Northern State. And just talk about that game and how that compares to other games that you've had a chance to coach in.
I mean, obviously the stakes were a lot higher. You're on the road in a tough environment, you know, with the crowd and whatnot. But no, it was a fun game. I don't think that I've seen a comeback like that. I don't know that I've even seen one in college basketball like that, where you had an 11, you're down 11 with, what, 2 to 3 minutes left to go against a really good basketball team and able to come back. And so, you know, I just think that says a lot about the character of our kids.
What are you saying to the team? How are you keeping up your positive spirit, I guess, at that point of, hey, keep going, keep pushing, whenever it does look a little bit bleak at times?
You know, I think it goes back to our recruiting and recruiting kids that do have that natural belief in them that eventually they're going to win. And so I can, you know, I can say so much and I can try to infect them with belief. But at that point, when your, you know, back's against the wall and there's 3 minutes left to go, there's really not a lot I can do. It's then becomes our kids and them believing and them fighting to be able to win the basketball game. And it was 100% them. I don't know what I said. I'm sure I said something
really innovative and unbelievable.
Like Gene Hackman and Hoosiers.
Oh, easy. Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you tape that speech, you should use it for motivation for the rest of your life. But no, it's them, you know, and you could just see it in their faces that they just weren't going to go home.
It really seemed, too, that they were just very calm about it. They knew what they had to be done, and they just went out and accomplished what needed to be done there without any panic involved with it.
I mean, there wasn't any panic. I wouldn't say calm, though, either. Maybe Trevor was calm. There wasn't panic, but, you know, I think there was an intensity, just an elite focus, an elite we're going to win, you know, just impose your will type of attitude that they had. But you know, and they part of it is you know, you can't really break in that moment if you want to have a chance. You know, this you know, you might as well at least go for it, and they went for it, and you know, it worked out for them.
I think it's easy to highlight at this point too, because it's fresh in everybody's minds of 27 points after halftime for Trevor Hudgens. He's had a lot of games like that this year to where maybe 3-4 points in the first half, 15 to 20 in the second half, and kind of takes the game over. What is it after halftime that he's kind of like, all right, it's time to go?
Well, after the halftime this one, he had shot two times. So I think at halftime I said, you're going to need to shoot the ball at some point. Like, you shot it twice, so we kind of need you to shoot. Part of him shooting, you know, it's not as much his scoring, but it's the threat of him scoring that helps our whole offense. And so when he doesn't score, he doesn't shoot, it really puts people in roles that they aren't naturally there for. And so he has to make sure that he does his role, which is to score and shoot some, and then obviously distribute as well. And so I thought that second half he did a better job of really scoring. And you know, we went away from some of the stuff that we had been doing. Part of it, too, is the way Washburn defends is so much different than the way – really most teams defend. And so it took us half the game to go back to what we had been doing before, and that was part of it as well.
One thing that was impressive, too, was after Trevor hit that three-point shot, he just turned around and headed over to the bench during that timeout and get ready for what's coming up next, as opposed to a lot of celebration and things that we saw out of some players on the other team. It's just kind of a matter of fact, I did that, now let's go to the next step.
I think that helps us be able to win a lot of games, is sometimes you can get to where you're a front runner. I don't necessarily think that he wasn't excited, and I think that there was some enthusiasm to a level shown, because you want to make sure that you're excited about things, but also to a point you want to make sure that it's on to the next thing and getting excited for everything.
Do you ever think about the difference in point guards you've had over the years? Of Deshaun Cooper was so fiery, and he was a guy that wore his emotions on his sleeve. It seemed like nothing got Justin Pitts up or down. Trevor shows a little more emotion, but at the same time, yeah, he hits that shot, and it's still very business workmanlike. Is there anything to recruiting guys and the way that they react in big moments?
Well, I think for the way I coach, usually calmer people are a little bit better at that position, because he takes a lot of heat. I mean, I'm on him pretty often, and so it's good for that person to have a calm disposition, because I'll get him excited pretty quick. So I mean, that personality is great. I think the personality of being steady and being humble and not getting excited about external things, I think, is probably the most important part, because if you're not, you get a lot of love that you know, is exciting, and if you let that infect you, then you don't have the success, and then your teammates aren't going to buy into who you are.
There are times when you see teams that make a comeback like that to force a game into overtime, then they have a bit of a letdown once they get into the overtime. What were some of the things you were able to do, or the team was able to do, to ensure that they were able to carry that momentum on into the overtime?
Hawkins took a charge. It's pretty much was the difference in the game, really. That I think it was the second or third, or maybe the first possession of the second or the overtime, and took a big charge. And I don't know that he's taken a charge in the history of his life, but he took one, and it was a big time charge. And then Parker fouled out, and I thought at that point, you know, there was just a matter of time before we were able to win the game.
Isaiah Jackson stepping in, and a true freshman that's got a lot more minutes as the season's gone on. But that was a very crucial time. How's he grown over the year to earn the minutes as we've seen the games go along?
You know, I think he's done a good job early just defensively. We knew that he was an elite defender. I think as time progressed, he built more and more trust that he could do that in a game setting. He's been a little bit more consistent in practice, meaning with all freshmen, they have a good day, they have a bad day, then they have a good day, then they have a bad day. He's starting to have consecutive good days, which builds that trust, and you're able to put him in the game. The other thing we thought we needed, we felt like we always had enough scoring punch in our starting lineup, and we needed somebody to come in and make sure that we kept our momentum going. And a lot of that depends on how good the defender is that comes in, and he's one of our best defenders. So he's able to keep momentum going when things aren't going our way. Or, I'm sorry, when things are going our way offensively, he can keep it going because he won't let a run get by because his defense is so good.
What about the play of Byron Alexander in the regional as well? He really has shown throughout the season that he's given you some valuable minutes, but boy, he stepped up and gave you a lot that you needed in the two games.
He's bought into his role, and that is he's a very good cutter, good offensive rebounder, good driver and finisher. And, you know, we needed that because that gives us easy paint touches, you know, whereas with our starting lineup we play a lot of shooting and we're not able to get paint as easy sometimes. And when you have a guy like him out there, it's an easy paint touch to be able to have him cut in there.
Will he shoot 80% for his career at Northwest? He's about 78 right now.
That's a good question, yeah. That's a great question. You know, it all depends on who's guarding. If you got a guy like Matt Tritton guarding him, he'll probably shoot 95. if Coffey's guarding him, he'll probably be about 25. Coffey's an elite shot blocker
those tennis days.
this guy just, like, tore his hamstring last month.
Doesn't matter. Toughness.
I was a slap the floor kind of defender.
Yeah, I know. You can slap it all you want. And shoot something 95%.
And when you look at this group that you're taking to the Elite Eight, not necessarily compared to the other teams you've taken there, but what makes this particular group very special for you?
I think they've battled through a lot, just and all the teams at the Elite Eight have, just with the COVID piece to it. And then, obviously, some of them had their seasons taken away towards the end of last year, and they've had to handle a lot of success. It gets to where, you know, it's funny, we're just talking to Austin Meyer, it's like, you know, you guys go through this regular season, and there's some games that you get excited for, and we get up for every game, and they compete, but it gets to where it can be a little bit of a grind. And then you get into postseason, it's like, oh, this is why we did all this. This is fun. I like this. And you know, there's only so many teams that get to play this time of year and experience this. And I don't know that even our guys realize how jealous other people, other teams are of their experience, because they get to experience championship settings and championship games. And those are things and memories that you'll take with you for the rest of your life. So how does it compare? I mean, they're a tough team. You know, they're different. I thought the first team was extremely hungry. The second team was hungry as well and extremely high Q. This one's kind of one of those teams that's just kind of, you know, we just kind of scrap a little bit. You know, we're not perfect. And I thought the 2019 team was about as close to perfect as you could get. I think this team, you know, sometimes we're a mess, and it's a fun mess. And so we just kind of scrap and will ourselves to victory.
Whenever you look at it, 27 games in as opposed to 2019, you ended up at 35 games at this point. Is the team fresher? Can you be fresh when you played this many games already?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can be fresh.
I mean, you're not Damon with 15 games, but still.
Golly. Yeah, no, you can be fresh. No, it's more of a mental wear and tear than it is a physical, in my opinion. I think that your legs are going to be sore. Everyone's legs are sore in the country. You're going to have some bumps and bruises. I think if your mental is fresh, then your physical will naturally come with it, no matter how sore you are. And I've always been a big believer that your mental goes quicker than your physical, and your mental creates a lot of your physical pain. And so if we can maintain that mental freshness and sharpness, then I think we're going to be fresh come Wednesday.
On the mental side, too, when you have to battle through a year like this, and again, as you mentioned, all teams have had to do some of this from one time or another with COVID. How important was it to keep the team mentally headed the right direction when you've had some things that normally you don't deal with during a season?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that goes with having good kids and kids that, want to do well and, want to succeed, and we have good leadership to where when I'm not around during a quarantine or whatnot, they're able to hold themselves accountable and, get better and improve. I think the, losses have helped reset us, especially our first loss, help us soul search a little bit and, self-reflect and know that, you know, we have our issues and we need to be better. And, you know, so hopefully it helps us come Wednesday.
From a media and fan perspective, it's an exciting matchup, the differing styles between Northwest and West Liberty. When you look at them on game tape, is it more stressful seeing a team like you haven't seen yet this year?
I mean, it just takes a lot more time scouting-wise, yeah. I don't think it's necessarily more stressful, but it's I guess stress is caused by work a little bit, so you it takes you a lot more time to really figure them out and to dive into them. Similar to like Northern State, you know, you only have a quick turnaround. Yeah, I mean, I think their style is fast, but it's not what you think necessarily. You know, I think it's very physical. I think they try to really increase their possessions, and they try to get more than you. It's not necessarily that they're taking as quick a shots as they possibly can. It's that they get, you know, 20 offensive rebounds in a game and 15 steals, and, all of a sudden they've got 20 more possessions than you. And so you just have to be careful to view it that way, meaning you know, most people view them as just playing fast, and I think that's part of it, but I think the main part of it is they really want to increase their possessions.
When you go up against a team like that, then how much of it is like trying to counter what they do, or do you try to impose the will of what you want to do in a game like this?
I mean, it's both. You know, I think that if you're changing up your style too much to an opponent, I think that's a problem. Especially this time of year, they do what they do and we do what we do. And so as long as you take good shots and you know, do what we do, attack the paint and you know, shoot threes and defend and do all that stuff, I think it'll naturally work itself out.
If you are breaking that press and going, is there any talk of, you know, pull it up, don't take that layup, or is it just kind of just go? If you get that opportunity, you can't pass it up.
Yeah, you have to attack. No, you can't just sit back in a press and just allow them to press you a whole game and not get easy buckets on the other end. So, no, that would be a major mistake to not attack a press. You have to, because that's what they want you to do, is not attack it. But they also want you to get sped up and take early average. And so you have to be careful on you know, is it great or is it early average? And if it's early average, you probably should then run what you need to run. If it's great, then get a great shot and expose the press.
Is there any team that you've played in the past that's similar to what you'll see out of this?
No. Fairmont State, maybe. St. Thomas Aquinas. You know, those teams probably are the most similar. And we played them, in 2017?
Match up with West Liberty on Wednesday. There's a lot of COVID protocols. So how are you going to go about finding your best restaurants in Indiana?
That's a good question. You know, we get delivery. I know that there's a place in St. Louis on the way there called Sugar Fire Barbecue. You ever been there?
No, go to Pappy's instead. It's better.
It's not.
I'll bring your ribs.
Sugar Fire is fire, as we say. Fantastic ambiance inside the restaurant. I don't know if we'll be able to go inside, so we might have to get it to go. I know Colin's really excited about it.
Is he?
Yeah.
He likes barbecue, doesn't he?
Yeah, he can. Yeah, he likes barbecue. So do I, though. So we'll eat there, and then in Indiana, you know, we'll just you know, play it by feel, and hopefully we'll have some good restaurants. So, you know, the problem with Aberdeen is there weren't a lot of selections. So, but Pounders up there was fantastic. Shout out to Pounders. They were fantastic for a meal.
If I bring you some ribs from Pappy's in Indiana, will you eat them? Or are you going to be throwing them away because of COVID?
Is Pappy's in Evansville?
It's in St. Louis.
Okay, then you'd have to ship them across.
I'll go to a Cardinals game. I'll order some. I'll put them in a cooler, bring them back home. They're that good.
You can't reheat ribs.
You can if they're that good. These are.
They'll be dry.
You're putting a lot of trust in Matt, too, that he'll bring them back safely without
They wrap them in, like, foil and plastic. They put them in, like, a styrofoam thing. There's dry ice in there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll eat them. I mean, it's because that'll be after we're done anyway, right? Or would you bring them to Indiana?
Either way.
Yeah, I mean, I could do it after.
What if I just ate half the slab and then I put them back in with my own hands and then you had to?
If it was after?
Yeah.
All right. I'll eat it. I don't care.
Okay. Yeah,
at that point, I'll eat it, anything.
Yeah. Just got to get through the end of the season.
Just get through the end of the season, and then we're rolling. Yep. Yep. Then I'll be fishing and going to my kids' stuff again and enjoying life and doing all that stuff. So, yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Living the dream. Right, John?
You
maybe
betcha.
Play John in some tennis. Well,
there you go. There
play
you go.
Madden in some basketball.
Well, I'm back and ready to go now. So I've
for tennis?
Yeah, I've been rehabbing all winter. Kelly's got me going with some rehab stuff, so I might be better than ever.
I don't know, John. I got a feeling that I could run down some balls. I'm pretty good at tennis, pretty high level.
Well, we'll check that out.
Anyway, yeah, have a great day, guys.
Northwest Missouri State head men's basketball coach Ben McCollum joining us here on KXCV KRNW's Bearcat Coaches Show, talking a little bit of everything from that Northern State win, Trevor Hudgens, a little bit about Ryan Hawkins and some other players on this squad, to ribs and fishing. So you never know what you're going to get with Coach Mack, but appreciate him joining us here on the KXCV Bearcat Coaches Show as we are getting set for Northwest Missouri State back in the Elite Eight. They'll be taking on West Liberty Wednesday at 6 o'clock. We'll have pregame actually right here on KXCV KRNW at 5:30 that evening, and a special program before that, even starting at 4:30, that'll get you set for everything you need to know about Northwest Missouri State and West Liberty. Our guests for that show include John McCarthy of Small College Basketball, kind of breaking down the matchup, but also talking about Northwest and what the Bearcats have done to get to this point. And also a former Bearcat hero in the NCAA tournament, Joey Wittes, as Joey will be joining us via phone to talk about his experience back in 2019 in Evansville and how he's seen this group grow and develop and continue to get better and better. So always great to talk with Joey Buckets. We'll be hearing from him coming up on Wednesday at 4:30 right here on KXCV KRNW. Right now, though, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more on the Bearcat Coaches Show as Ryan Hawkins is set to join us next.
Support for the Bearcats comes from U.S. Bank, providing banking services to Northwest students and the community. U.S. Bank is a proud supporter of Bearcat Athletics and Northwest Missouri State University. More on their products, services, and locations at usbank.com.
Support for the Bearcat Radio Network comes from Millen Dinsdale Seed Company in Maryville and Oregon. Representing Golden Harvest Corn and NK Soybeans, Millen Dinsdale reminds you that there are no practice fields in farming. More at MillenDinsdaleSeed.com.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Northwest Cell, located at 1218 South Main in Maryville. Along with nationwide coverage, Northwest Cell carries a full line of iPhones, iPads, and Androids. More information on plans and devices is at NWMCell.com. Bearcat radio broadcasts are brought to you by Championship Motors on South Main in Maryville. Championship offers late model pre-owned autos and conducts vehicle searches upon request. More at championshipmotorsllc.com or at 582-8800. Support for the Bearcat Coaches Show on KXCV comes from Pizza Ranch at US 71 and 1st Street in Maryville. Pizza Ranch's buffet is open daily and features pizza and fried chicken with all the trimmings, plus a salad bar with dessert and ice cream. More in store at pizzaranch.com.
Welcome back, and we're talking with Northwest Missouri State's Ryan Hawkins with us on our program here today. And, Hawk, let's just go back to the Central Region Tournament. And really, you couldn't ask for two games that were completely different as what you had in the semifinal win over Washburn and then the overtime win in the championship game with Northern.
No, not at all. It felt good to kind of get that Washburn game off our back a little bit on Sunday. But, man, Northern gave us a great one on Tuesday. I felt like we didn't really play that well. We didn't play overly well on Tuesday night, but found a way to win, and that's all that matters come March. So very thankful we won.
So there's so much focus on the final 3 minutes of that basketball game, being down by 11, the comeback, which was incredible. First half, though, you're down by 12, the biggest deficit Northwest had faced all year long. The perseverance had to start way earlier in that basketball game. What was the feeling like in the huddle on the floor of like, all right, we're okay. It's a little different environment than we've seen all year at Northern with that big of a crowd, but you guys still found a way to fight through it.
Yeah, I never felt that there was a sense of panic or urgency in the huddle. You know, we were pretty poised the entire game, even down 11 with 2 minutes left. I'm not going to say that we all thought we were going to win the game, but we all knew there was a pretty good chance. But the first half, we didn't set ourselves up for success very well at all, didn't execute offensively. I couldn't really guard anybody defensively to start the game, which is a little bit of a new feeling, but we found a way to correct it, and ultimately we found a way to win, and that's all that matters.
You know, Mac talked about the difference between facing Washburn one night, then turning around with the day in between facing a Northern State team that were so different in what they tried to do defensively. How much of an adjustment did you have to make with the two styles of play that you saw in the regional?
Oh, it was a quick turnaround for sure, especially when you have over a week to prepare for a game. And then Northern came out, and I think they kind of surprised us. They hit us a little bit in the face, and we responded to that, which was good. But I think they shocked us a little bit at the start with how much energy and effort they were going to bring all night. And it was good for us. We ended up finding a way.
A lot of emphasis on Parker Fox. But up and down, that was a good starting lineup, a really solid basketball team. Whenever you go into that and you think about how the Central Region plays, and you've kind of seen this play out before in previous tournaments, but, I mean, it's some of the best coming out of these two conferences, the MIAA and the NSIC, getting you ready for the Elite Eight.
Yeah, no doubt. You look at the national championship games the last 6 years, I think you'll see a Central Regional team there the last five, which is pretty remarkable. Just goes to show the quality of basketball that's being played in our region, specifically in our conference. You know, hats off to Washburn. They're a great team. They play the right way. They got a great point guard in Tyler Guyman. But, you know, I think it does just go show the level of competition we're playing every year. And the COVID year was no exception.
When you play a team like a Northern State, too, it seems like as much as any team I've ever seen, they play to the crowd as much as they do the opponent out there with a lot of celebration after plays they make. When you're playing up against a team like that, what goes through your mind when you see some of that on the floor?
Oh, you just want to make sure that they're watching those highlights from home after the game. That's about, that's about all you can think. You know, if I was dunking everything, too, you know, I might be a little more excited. I might. But, you know, I feel like they definitely did try to entertain the crowd a little bit. And, you know, for some people, that's just what they do. And I feel like, you know, at Northwest during my time here, Max never had to talk to us about our celebrations or our antics or anything. So I'm pretty proud of that and pretty proud of our team for that.
Whenever you look at that overtime period, it was about a minute in. You're playing with four fouls. Parker Fox has four fouls. You're guarding him there down in the left block. How do you go about doing that to where you're like, all right, I can't foul him. I still have to be physical, and then you draw that charge.
Yeah, you know, that was a scouting thing going in. We knew we could take a charge. But with Parker, he's just got so many moves down there, you never know what's going to come. And so I was just trying to bait him into going middle hard, trying to put a little bit of pressure on the bottom side of his hips, making him think he can go middle. And he took that dribble, and I knew it was now or never. I'd played 15 minutes with four fouls. I don't know how I did that, that's for sure. But, no, you know, we needed that charge one way or another. We had to get him out of the game. And Mac likes to joke about it, but I don't like taking charges. That's just not – I just don't like it because, you know, you got to sell it a little bit. And number one, I'm not very good at that. Number two, I don't necessarily always agree with it. But, no, he hit me in the chest, and I knew I had to take it. And got very thankful that we got the call there because I felt like that was kind of a turning point in the game for us.
Yeah, and just from the reaction to the players, how the players feel once you saw that Parker Fox went out of the game there? Did that kind of give you guys just a little bit of an extra step as you were going down the floor knowing that he wouldn't be out there the rest of that game?
I don't know if it necessarily gave us any more energy or motivation after that, but I definitely think it changed what we were going to do offensively a little bit, and we got, I think we scored five in a row after that, and kind of didn't look back, so that was pretty good for us.
So you've got potentially, if you want to take it, a fifth year to come back and play once again at Northwest, but year four, your senior season, you reached the 2,000-point plateau, yourself and Justin Pitts, the only Bearcats to ever do that. How special is that, thinking back to all the years of Northwest Missouri State basketball history? One of your former teammates did it, now you're also reaching that mark.
I mean, it is pretty surreal, just because that's a lot of points. But I think, you know, it just goes to show the quality of kids I've been able to play with during my years here because, you know, my first year of playing, I came off the bench, played 15, 20 minutes a game, didn't score a lot. I was in there to play defense and rebound a little bit. And then sophomore year, we went and made the national title run, and that was still kind of my role, just shoot when I'm open and play a little bit of defense, get some rebounds. But I think the biggest thing is it comes from playing the right way. You don't go out there looking to score. You go out there looking to play basketball the right way. And with the guys that we've had on the team during my time here, that's never been an issue for us. It's always been at the forefront of everyone's mind, and just been very blessed to play with very unselfish people and very team-oriented people.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that really stands out when you look at the points that you've scored. It all comes within the offensive scheme of things, so that you take the shots when they're there, and unfortunately, they go down for you.
Yeah, I like when they go down.
So you mentioned that your role, especially early, is play defense. You're a two-time MIAA Defensive Player of the Year, all-defense team once again this season. Zach Schneider said not too long ago that when you were redshirting, that in practice, himself, Doherty, the other big guys, was like, all right, we got to match up with Hawkins. He's an easy bucket. How did you grow from being a true redshirting that freshman year of, man, they think you're an easy bucket, to you're one of the best defensive players in the country right now in NCAA D2?
Honestly, I think it's just from focusing on basketball. You know, high school, played 5-6 different sports my entire career there, so never really got to just focus on basketball. But, you know, I came in here 6'7", 185. My body looks a lot different now than it did 5 years ago when I first stepped on campus. You know, Coach Quinlan's done a great job with me in the weight room, getting some muscle on my frame, and I think that's the biggest thing for me is I was just a little, not necessarily undersized, but understrength my first year here, and they could just kind of have their way with me down there, and I hated that feeling, so kind of dedicated myself to the weight room a little bit there to help out.
I would think, too, going up against those type of players in practice, some of the best in the MIAA or the nation even, has to help out, too, when you get into to games against some other teams, to where you've had a chance to work on your defense against the type of guys that come through the Northwest program.
Oh, definitely. It's very humbling, that's for sure. When you're down low with Brett Doherty, Devontae Mosby, Tyler Doherty, yeah, I can't throw Zach in there, but you put Coach Schneider out on the 3-point line, and he's deadly. And it's just, you know, you learn a lot from guarding them. Pay attention to their footwork, you know, what angles they're trying to get on you, stuff like that. And you just make mental notes of that, and you come back to that. And, you know, honestly, the pick-and-pop stuff from watching Zach as a freshman, that's been the biggest help for me. Throughout my years here is understanding the footwork, and you know, he's in the gym almost every day with me. Coach Schneider's work ethic can't go unnoticed at all. But I think the biggest thing is you just got to pay attention to the little details and kind of go with it a little bit, just go with the flow.
As we look back at that game against Northern, a lot's made about Trevor went off in the second half. He had the big shot and really played a fantastic basketball game. But there have been quite a few moments, too, throughout the year to where some critical times, even that MIAA tournament championship here against Washburn, it felt like you're willing the Bearcats to win. And if not Tyler Guymon hitting a miracle shot, you do pull out that tournament championship game. But do you find yourself, especially in your senior season, of you're already a leader before, but kind of get into those moments of, all right, things are tough right now. Got to find a way to make a play. Maybe hit a three. Maybe it's diving on the floor to get a ball. But it feels like when there's a big moment, you're stepping up, making that play.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a leadership piece of it. I think it's just going back to trying to play the game the right way. You know, you can infect people with your attitude and your energy and your effort every single possession. And a lot of times, Diego Bernard's the one doing that with me out there. And man, it's fun to play defense when he's in one of those moods. but no, you know, sometimes shots aren't going to fall on offense. Sometimes, you know, like when Trevor's hot, you know, you're just going to spread the floor and let him go to work. You got to be in there to get a rebound, and you got to get stops. And against Northern, I felt like that's what we did very well as a team down the stretch there.
You know, last year, going into the Central Regional Tournament, Northwest, like the rest of the teams, got the, kind of the rug pulled out of them going out with everything halted at that particular time. And last year, this team was one of the favorites to go in and win perhaps a back-to-back national title there. How much of what took place last year with getting that taken away from you is carrying over to right now, this particular time, where you guys feel like you've got something to prove after missing a year like last year?
I think the biggest thing I missed is just the environment and the energy that comes with it. You walk into a gym for practice up in Northern, it's like there's that buzz, that excitement in the gym. I'm not saying it's not there during the regular season, but it's very prevalent during postseason play, and I miss that feeling. And you know, it hurts my heart so much to think about Welty, Kirk, and Tyler not getting that opportunity last year. One of the few times I ever saw Welty cry was when we found out the tournament was canceled, and it's like, just for those three to have that moment ripped from them, I feel like for us to not go out and give our absolute best every game, it's kind of a disservice to those three.
Now, the atmosphere this year will be a little bit different in Evansville, obviously, with the protocols that will be taken. But for a team that has a lot of guys that were around during that last run in Evansville, how much of an advantage do you feel that will be for you coming into this?
I think being comfortable in the gym will be big for us. You know, Trevor played great down there 2 years ago. And, you know, we have a lot of the essentially core group back, so that'll be exciting to go down there and play. I think we're just excited for the opportunity to play. We didn't care where it was going to be at. We just wanted to get to this point of the season.
Hey, where does that confidence come from? Obviously, you've had a lot of success in the past, but to know that you can draw upon that, how do you maintain that type of confidence?
Practice is what I'm going to say. You know, every day in practice, you're trying to get the best flow you can offensively, trying to play the best defense you have all year, and I think we're starting to get to that point every single day in practice right now, and I think if you have a couple good practices leading into those games, it'll help us a lot.
It's going to be only the second non-conference game that you've had all year, even though we're just now 28 games in, which is crazy to think. But a team like West Liberty, they like to get up and down. They want to press. Coach Mack talked about that a little bit. But is this exciting for you, seeing a team that just a completely different style and something new to get ready for?
It is. But at the same time, I think our conference schedule has done such a great job preparing us for this stretch here. You know, they are a pressing team. They like to get up and down a little bit. But the good thing is, you know, we've played UCO twice, and they are very good at what they do with their little three-quarters court press into a little drop zone. And so there again, I think our conference is doing a very good job of preparing us for this tournament.
What are some of the keys for you as far as matching up with the West Liberty that you see right now?
Guard the ball. Like Max said, it's not like they just jack shots. They execute their game plan very well. And so it'll come to guarding the ball, winning your individual matchup while being there to help somebody else.
Going to Indiana, going to be in Evansville, second time in a few years. Obviously, basketball is the big part, but is there anything else just about being in the hotel with the guys or something in Evansville that you kind of think back on a couple years ago that, you know, one of the highlights of the trip outside of obviously winning a national championship?
There's this arcade place we went the very first night we were in Evansville 2 years ago. I don't even know what it was called, but it had everything from bowling to laser tag to arcade games. They fed us chicken wings, and they had like a whole buffet ready for us. And if you knew the personalities on the team at that time, that was right up our alley. Man, we had so much fun with that game. But, you know, I felt like that was a very good way for us to get there, relax, and be like, you know, it's not do or die. You know, have a little bit of fun, relax, and enjoy yourself. And, you know, obviously with COVID this year, we won't be able to do that, so we'll have to find a way to relax in the hotel, which is a lot harder to do because then you're just sitting there in your room with your thoughts thinking about the week, the upcoming game, and everything. But, you know, those are the days you're going to miss when you're done playing, so we're going to have to embrace them and make the most of it.
From the look of things in Aberdeen, you play some pretty mean cards out there, too, in the lobby, anyhow.
Yeah, 10-point pitch. I'm a fan.
Did you beat up on Dakar?
If he's not listening, yes.
Northwest Missouri State senior forward from Atlantic, Iowa, Ryan Hawkins joining us here on the KXCV Bearcat Coaches Show. We'll take a time out. When we come back, we will be joined by Jesse Shaw, a former NCAA tournament hero for Northwest Missouri State, now head coach at Maryville University. We'll talk to him about his time as a Bearcat and one big shot that sent Northwest Missouri State to Bakersfield, California back in 2004. That's coming up next right here on KXCV KRNW.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Bomley Auto Sales. Bearcat alumnus Joe Bomley has been providing late model program vehicles and pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs since 1983. More at BomleyAuto.com or on the lot at 5 Mile Corner south of Maryville.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Northwest Missouri Regional Credit Union, serving residents and employees in Nottoway, Andrew, Atchison, Holt, and Worth counties, Northwest alumni in 19 school districts across the area. Northwest Missouri Regional Credit Union, today, tomorrow, together.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Losh Optometry. Serving Maryville and the surrounding area, Dr. Ryan Losh and his staff provide patients with eye exams, eyeglasses, including progressive and bifocal lenses, contacts, and sunglasses. More information is available at 660-241-5001.
Support for the Bearcat Coaches Show on KXCV comes from Pizza Ranch at US 71 and 1st Street in Maryville. Pizza Ranch's buffet is open daily and features pizza and fried chicken with all the trimmings, plus a salad bar with dessert and ice cream. More in store at pizzaranch.com.
We're talking Northwest Missouri State basketball today, and it was about 14 years ago last week, one of the biggest shots in Northwest Missouri State history came from Jesse Shaw. A three-pointer sent the Bearcats into the Elite Eight in Bakersfield, California. Jesse now is the head coach at Maryville University. He's joining us today on the program, and it's great to catch up with you again, Coach Shaw, especially this time of year, March Madness, so much great basketball going on. You really can't beat it.
Absolutely. No, it's always exciting, and it's been a two-year hiatus from having March Madness, so this is it's really fun to have it back.
So the head coach at Maryville, you've got a ton of responsibilities, recruiting, and so many other things going on. Do you keep an eye on the Division II tournament and in general kind of what Northwest Missouri State's doing with your alma mater there?
Yes, I don't. So what I usually do with the Division II tournament is I watch the teams from the GLVC and I watch Northwest, and that's kind of I stay pretty much on top of that. I watched the Washburn game, and then I watched the Northern State game the other day, and I watched all of our GLVC tournament. So that's kind of what I do. I'll be following Truman State and Northwest, and I watched when Northwest makes it. I usually watch all the Elite Eight games and the Final Four and the championship, and I'll watch the championship either way in the GLVC team. So we got Truman State from our conference is in, and Northwest is in. So I'll be definitely keeping an eye on it this year.
Plenty of basketball to keep up on for you then. And so speaking of that game against Northern, Trevor Hudgens kept Northwest Missouri State's season alive. He had that step-back three-pointer, put the game into overtime, and eventually the Bearcats reached the Elite Eight. Does that bring back a few flashbacks for you of yourself in a Northwest uniform?
Well, it was a little different scenario. The ball was in Kelvin's hands, and they just double-teamed him and left me wide open. And I didn't have a choice but to shoot it, but, you know, actually his shot was even more critical because, you know, we were down three the other day. When I shot it, it was a tie game. Worst case scenario, we're going to overtime. So his was extremely clutch. And as a fan of the Bearcats and an alum, I watched the Washburn game, and it was actually kind of boring. You know, the conference tournament championship game was exciting, but I didn't like the way it ended. But then we play Northern State, and that one's just gut-wrenching. But it ended the right way, so it ended up being really, really, really fun to watch, but it's a lot harder to go through.
Regardless of the tournament, D1, D2, NAIA, whatever it is, there's always those memories and those games from years past that always get brought up and you see the highlights. I mean, how often, especially this time of year, does that memory randomly pop in your head of, man, I was open there in the corner, Kelvin got it to me, and I knocked it down?
Yeah, no, our guys at the schools that I've coached at, they don't think I can shoot the ball anymore. And now with Coach Tapp with us here at Maryville, he likes to remind him, hey, Coach Shaw hit the biggest three-pointer up until Hudgens in the history of Northwest. And the reason that it was the biggest three-pointer is because all those teams that Ben has had lately, most times they're winning by 10 or 20 or 30. You know, we had one come down to the wire there. But, no, it's always fun to relive those memories. And there wasn't a lot of decision that had to be made on my shot. The clock was going to expire. I had to shoot it, and I just got lucky it went in.
So we see what Northwest is doing these past 10 years or so under Coach McCollum, and a lot of great things happening. And, you know, you were part of two Elite Eight teams that just couldn't quite reach that semifinal and beyond. Coach Max won a couple championships. Do you think back to 2004, 2002, and what those teams did to start to lay that foundation, especially whenever he was a member of the 2002 team, if I remember correctly, also kind of laying that foundation for where we're at now?
Yeah, you're talking. Yeah, Ben was he was a player on the 2002 team, and he was a GA on the 2004 team, and I was a player on both those teams, so I was with them on both, and I do think that Coach Tapp and all the fellas that we played with, and then the guys before us and after us, they laid a great foundation. When Ben got there, you really thought that the bar was set almost unrealistically high, and then Ben's taking it to a whole nother level, which when he got that job, you wouldn't think that. I mean, you would think he could break through and win one, but to do what he's done, Coach Tapp and I were talking to me the other day. I mean, I don't know if it's been replicated on, you know, the Division I level, Division II level. We're trying to think who has had a run. I mean, obviously you got the UCLA run, but I mean, I don't know if there's been a 5-year stretch that there's been as much dominance as he's had. I could be wrong. We didn't look it up too much in depth, but you know, it's really historical what they're doing right now. And you would have thought it would have been hard for him to even reach where we were at, where Coach Tapp was at.
It really is unheard of to think about some of those numbers and where they're at. But you think about those couple teams that you're on there with the Elite Eight, with Coach Tapp as the head coach, Coach McCombs on the team, yourself on the team, Austin Meyer, Andy Peterson also coming through, and I know there are plenty of other names that I'm forgetting, but there are a lot of guys that go into coaching that those couple teams right there just kind of spit out a bunch of really good basketball minds.
Oh, yeah, and I think part of it was we had so much fun that you go off and into the quote-unquote real world, and you're thinking, well, I want to do that, you know, for the rest of my life. What's the closest thing to that? Well, it's coaching, you know, and a lot of it comes from the amount of fun we had while we were in college playing together. And, you know, Coach Tapp creating that environment and bringing those group of guys together that we enjoyed being around and the success we had. And a lot of us really enjoyed it and we want to keep doing it. So we're in this coaching business now and it's not all sunshine and roses like Ben has had the last few years, but I don't know if I can do anything else because I definitely enjoy it.
So you're in your first year as the head coach at Maryville University, and on the way through that, Truman State, you mentioned, is in the Elite Eight. They have two losses, only one of the regular season. That comes at the hands of the Maryville Saints. Do you shoot Ben a text and say, hey, if you meet it with Truman State the second round, this is the recipe to beat them?
Oh, yeah. Well, we played them. I don't think Ben can replicate our recipe because we played them right out of Christmas break. And then their head coach and they have a really good freshman guard were both out with COVID at the time we played them. So those are three factors that I don't know if Ben's going to be able to conjure up here while he's down there in Evansville. But, you know, I thought we played a good game. I thought we had a good game plan. But when we went back up there, we tried to do some of the similar things, and they were ready for it, and they really stretched us out in the second half there, and made us pay for our win in Maryville. But you know, I think that both those teams, I think they're both really good, but they both, when you get to that point, you got your hands full in round one, and there is no round two without round one. So, and Ben's as good as anybody is. Not worrying about the next game, and I think Horner will be the same way. You know, those guys had a tough early exit in the GLVC tournament, and that was only their second loss of the year, and I think they'll come into the Elite Eight hungry, and Ben always has them ready for the first game too.
And you have to think, even though Truman State not in the MIAA anymore, we have the Bearcats and the Bulldogs here in the state of Missouri. On the women's side, the University of Central Missouri and Drury University in the Elite Eight. It's really overall a great year for Show Me State Hoops.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that you know, we talk as Division II's all the time, where we run into Division I in recruiting. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and essentially our level of basketball would be low major basketball on the East Coast. You know, those guys those schools went Division I years ago, and now they're the same level of play out there is a Division I league, and that's pretty much what we have. We just don't have as many of those low major type of leagues around here. We just have a few. So there's somewhere that these really good players have to go, and that's why you see a state like Missouri that's sending four teams to an Elite Eight from one state. 25% of the Elite Eight on each side is represented from one state. But when you start looking at the landscape, Iowa doesn't really even have a low major school. Nebraska only has one. Kansas doesn't really have a low major. I mean, the smallest Division I school in Kansas is Wichita State. Missouri's got a couple you would consider, but you look at that four-state radius, and if their kids aren't good enough to play in the Valley or the American or the Big 12 or Big 10, where are they going to go? You know, those same kids on the East Coast are going to a small Division I, most likely. Well, in our area, they're going to Northwest Missouri, Truman, Drury, you know, Maryville. You know, like that's where they have to land. So it's just kind of an interesting dynamic that I think has worked itself out geographically with the way that Division I's, you know, D2's have transitioned to D1's in other areas.
And it's cool to see. It also makes it kind of a tough road to reach that point and go through your conference tournament, the region, and so on. But you take over a Maryville team, that had won five games the previous year. You up that by three wins during a COVID year, so there's less opportunities to get out there and do that. Take us through that first season. What was this like for you getting back in that head coaching role and doing it here at Maryville?
Well, it was an interesting year, obviously, as everybody knows. I my wife asked me one time, like, would you want to do this every year? Talking about the COVID part of it. And I mean, I'm usually as gung-ho about coaching. I love it. But this year it was really tough, you know, just basically going to work and not seeing anybody's, you know, I couldn't even pick out people in the office. I don't know what their significant others look like, what their kids look like. You know, you go to a game, you don't see anybody afterwards, no parents. No family and friends are there for us or our kids. And, you know, the testing and not being able to do the camaraderie, team building stuff. And, you know, it's been a really tough year from that aspect. But I'm really glad we did it. I think it was great for the kids. I think it was great. If I was going to pick a year to go through this, I think year one going through it is going to be, I'd rather go through it this year than year three, four, five, where, you know, you hopefully got something built up and you're competing for championships, and then you're going through COVID pauses and cancellations left and right. You know, I'm really happy that it worked out this way, but I hope that we don't have to go through this again. It's been fun, though, you know, getting back over in the role. There's positives and negatives to head coaching and assistant coaching. I really enjoy being a head coach, but there was also things that I enjoyed about being an assistant coach. It's just a little stressful over in the first seat. It's a little more lonely. There's not a lot of places to look when things go wrong. You know, you got to look in the mirror a lot, and you got to figure out what you need to get better at. And you're in control, and there's some fun things about that. And I like having the weight on my shoulders, and I like being able to change things if we need to change things. But there's also some freeing things being an assistant coach, where you don't have to worry quite as much. So it's been a great year. I feel like we made a really good jump in year one, given the circumstances. You know, they were 1-19 in conference last year. We were 8-12. I think in a regular year, you know, we probably win 4, 5, 6 more games than what we won. We're probably at 12, 13, 14 wins. You know, I think that's a good jump, but at the same time, going 8-12, it doesn't sit well with me or, you know, but really anybody in our program. And I think that's a good thing. But we just gotta, you know, keep working, keep getting better, and keep adding the right kind of guys and getting more time with our players so that we can, you know, develop them and develop this core we got. We got a bunch of young guys. We were playing with on our 11-man roster. We had 6 freshmen and 2 sophomores this year. And when you look nationally, a lot of the younger teams were really struggling this year just because of the lack of time you had to work with your guys. And I think, you know, our guys did a good job, but I think they have a lot of room to grow where, you know, maybe the teams that are older now, maybe they can't make as big a jump as our freshmen can, just because from a physical perspective and just a basketball sense, they kind of already are mature and they know how to play the game, and there's not as much for them to learn now. And I think our young group has a lot to learn and grow from, and, you know, and then we're going to add some pieces to that, and hopefully we can take another step forward.
Well, I know when we last talked to you in April, after you got the job and had you on the podcast, we were excited to see a Bearcat going on and getting that head coaching opportunity once again. But Steve Tatmeyer wasn't on your staff just yet. How surreal is that to go back from thinking of playing for Steve Tatmeyer and now he's on your staff and you're in charge?
Oh, it was. It's been really surreal. It's been really fun. There's a way that you view. I can tell our guys view me a certain way, and you know you always feel like you're getting disciplined. And you know our guys, if you ask all 11 of them who's the one coach is hardest on, every one of them would say me probably. you know when you're flippant and you're with Coach Tapp in the coaching role, you realize how positive he was, and you know how nice he is, and maybe he's changed in his old age, but it was just really fun to be around him, and we have so many stories to go back on, and I think he's really enjoyed being back in it, and you know, not having the stress and the that I've alluded to of worrying about every little decision as a head coach. I think he's liked kind of the role he's been in, and he can be a little bit more of the good cop, and he lets me be the bad cop, and I think that's kind of fun for him. And you know, it's been fun for me. Coach Anderson, our other assistant coach, he was my first assistant coaching hire at JUCO, and being around Coach Tapp and Coach A every day, you know, you're around Coach Tapp every day for 4 or 4.5 years, and Coach Anderson every day for 2 years, and then you go different places, and then you see him, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a year maybe, and it's fun to have had this year where we can, you know, get to see each other every day again and hang out on the road and talk, tell some old stories. And, you know, both of us probably inflate our side of the story a little bit, but it's always fun to go back and talk about those things.
Unfortunately, because of COVID, we didn't have a chance to get out and see any Maryville games or get that potential Northwest Maryville non-conference game. But is Coach Tatmeyer, is he on the bench with the towel over his shoulder, even though he's the assistant?
He has not had the towel over his shoulder this year at all. He's not up there stomping around. I would say he's way more calm than I, and I think the Maryville fans would remember him being also. But you know, it's just a lot different in the role he's in, and I'm more of the bad cop now, and I'm on the refs now, and I'm on the guys now, and he's patting him on the back and you know, saying, hey, coach really meant this. He might have sounded this way, but he really meant this. And now he's the one calmly talking to the refs when I'm up yelling. And I think there's part of this that he's enjoying.
I'm sure he is. Kind of cool to see that different dynamic there for yourself and Coach Tatmeyer. And so hopefully as we get into 2021-2022 season coming up next fall and winter, we'll be able to see some Maryville University and catch up with you again. But Coach Shaw, always great to talk with you, relive some old memories and talk about Maryville University, and hope to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Matt.
Maryville University head coach Jesse Shaw joining us here on the Bearcat Coaches Show, and have to throw in a quick correction. I said 14 years ago last week. It was actually 17 years ago last week that Shaw hit that three-pointer to send Northwest to the Elite Eight. But great to hear from Coach Shaw and relive some of those playing days from his time here at Northwest Missouri State.
And that's going to wrap things up for today's Bearcat Coaches Show. We want to remind you we have an Elite Eight preview coming up Wednesday at 4:30 right here on KXCV KRNW. That will have interviews with Small College Basketball's John McCarthy, former Bearcat Joey Wittes, and current head women's basketball coach Austin Meyer as well. Check that out, 4:30 on Wednesday on KXCV KRNW, followed by pregame at 5:30, then the opening tip between Northwest and West Liberty at 6 o'clock here on KXCV Maryville KRNW Chillicothe. Thanks for tuning in for today's program. Next up, Here and Now on 90.5 and 88.9.